You are Locked On Pirates, your daily podcast on the Pittsburgh Pirates, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Fans, it's the last day of April, April 30th, Monday. That means tomorrow, Tuesday, is May. We're a month into the season, and the Pittsburgh Pirates are first place in the division. This is Clear the Deck on Locked On Pirates Podcast Network, your daily Pittsburgh Pirates podcast of choice. For Alex Stumpf, I am Jared Prugar, one of your beautiful hosts with a golden voice, and my other co-host with another golden voice is Alex Stumpf. Alex, how are you on this fine Monday?
I'm pretty good, because it's Monday, not Sunday, whenever we're actually recording this, right?
Yeah, well, hey, listen.
Oh, it's Monday, so man, that Kingdom game yesterday was really good.
That's right.
Kingdom game yesterday.
Well, if you watched any of the Penguins game Sunday night, it feels like Kingdom hasn't thrown for about 7 days. But, yes, this airs on Monday, as it has all year, and we record on Sundays. Spoiler alert, fans. But, yes, Kingdom.
We actually record this live every time someone listens to us. We have a very demanding Monday schedule.
Yes, it doesn't happen very often. But, yes, let's speak about Kingdom. Tell me about this Kingdom guy.
Yeah, I mean, if you've been following, you know, the prospects that the Pirates have had the last 6 or 7 years, he's been universally ranked as one of the top pitchers in the farm system. And Tommy John surgery in 2015 put him back for a bit. But he finally looks healthy. He was dominant his first start. I mean, truly dominant. He retired the first 20 batters he faced, and in pretty convincing fashion the entire way. He was throwing a slider, which is a pitch he didn't have a month ago, a bunch. He got 12 whiffs with it. It was pretty much the perfect MLB debut. I can see why the expectations for this kid are really high, and I'm sure right about now they're even higher in this city.
This has been such an incredible journey for Nick Kingdom, and being able to watch him from the minors on up through all the setbacks, there is nothing more fulfilling than watching this guy go out on Sunday afternoon in the throwbacks and just shove. The Cardinals aren't the Cardinals of old by any means, but he went out there and he dominated and controlled that game from first pitch really up until his last pitch. He played incredibly well, and you can tell that this is something that this kid is ready for, more so than not. Now, it'll be very interesting how he handles himself coming back after that in his next start. If he does get one, I know he is going to be traveling with the team to Washington, which, boo Washington. But it's going to be very interesting to see how he handles that. But for right now, let's live in the moment a little bit, and that was one hell of a start for a guy that's really, it's been about 8 years in the making.
Yeah, I don't know how you can just regulate him to bullpen work right about now, unless you truly think, oh yeah, he's a future bullpen arm, which, no, he looks like the type of guy that if he's in the majors, he's going to start. I'm actually at a loss of words for how great his first start was. He looked confident the entire time. He said, oh yeah, I was nervous. It was my first start, but he didn't look it. He was doing his warm-ups to let me clear my throat this afternoon. And every single time, you know, innings started, he was the first guy out of the dugout. He was geared up and ready to go. He looked like a guy who had spent 9 years in the minors and was finally getting his first crack at the majors.
Right, and that's
funny reason for that.
Exactly, and I think that's what made this game so fulfilling to me, because I was able to get to see a little bit of it, but it was so cool to see him just come out and dominate and be the Nick Kingdom that really when they drafted him that the Pirates and their Pirates fans really expected him to be, and he's really not been able to be that since getting drafted. It's been purely injury after injury after injury. Setback after setback after setback that he's really, to me, he's never really gotten to a groove where he's been able to be in a position where he can make an impact at the major league level. But now he has. And in one start, obviously, there's still a lot to be determined. But he proved it. The kid can play, and he can play very, very well.
Yeah. And I guess we should probably mention that was a pretty good series, and I guess homestand overall. But I sweep believe... of the Cardinals, they're not the best Cardinals team. There's, like I said last week, they're sub 500 against everyone who's not, you know, Cincinnati. But there is never a situation where a sweep of the Cardinals is anything less than incredible. Because even a bad
any team, whether they're the Cardinals, the Reds, whoever, is incredible, right?
Yeah.
Just sweeps in general.
I mean, I'm doing some head math here. This team's what? They won 3 out of 4 against Cincy, 2 out of 3 against the Cubbies, and then 3 against St. Louis. They're 8-2 in the division then.
That sounds about right. And they're one.
Boy, isn't that a change of pace?
And let me just pull up the standings here. They're 17-11 right now. So we could perceivably enter the month of May tomorrow, Tuesday, with 18 wins. Monday night go very well. So the Mets have 17 wins. They're 17-9. They jumped out to a rocket start, but they've also only played 26 games. The NL Central itself has 4 teams above 500. Now, granted, the Pirates are 6 games over 500. Chicago is 5 games. The Cards after this series are only 3 games, and the Brewers are 3 games above as well. Then you've got the Reds. But looking out, that's the most competitive division in baseball at the moment. The AL Central is a mess, comparatively speaking, because that's really who the Pirates will play in their league. They've got the Royals, who are comparable to the Reds. The White Sox are comparable to Reds. The Twinkies, who are... Yeah. And then you've got the Tigers and the Indians. But going by wins, Boston and New York, 20-17, respectively. And then Houston, who's got 19 wins as well. So the Pirates are in some pretty elite company when it comes to wins and losses so far in the early part of the season. No, thanks in no great part than to Kingdom's shove session today.
Yeah, and I know I just ripped on the Cardinals for being sub 500 if you take away their Cincy games. I guess you could say the same for the Pirates. If you take away Detroit, this is a fairly pedestrian 12-10 team. But
and they've actually played only one game a day with teams other than Detroit. Fun fact.
Yes, in the 2 doubleheaders against Detroit. You know, I like to think I'm occasionally funny on Twitter.
I'll give you that.
Okay. I try to be occasionally
That's
funny.
Your one compliment from me today.
Okay, since we're no longer feuding, unlike last week.
For now.
Joe Block, the Pirates play-by-play guy, he's great at picking up these little factoids. And before Wednesday's game, he said this is the first doubleheader that the Pirates and Tigers are playing in Pittsburgh since 1890-something. And then I got back to him, when was the last time that the Pirates and Tigers played a doubleheader in Detroit? And I had like 17 people explain to me they played there earlier this year.
That they did.
It's a joke. I'm trying to be funny here. Come on. I guess it was a little too dry.
Sometimes your humor is a little dry, Alex. But for guys like me who enjoy that kind of humor, it is funny. More often than not. Did you see what I did there?
Yeah. More off?
Than not, yes.
Yes.
I know.
He's been hitting the ball, though.
I know.
They're just going foul.
I know that you have a man crush on Max Moroff.
You should be starting.
I'm not discounting that, to be perfectly honest with you. I'm not very pleased, not that my opinion matters or anything, by the job that Frazier has done from the leadoff spot. Not saying that Max Moroff is a leadoff guy, but his productivity has not been what it should be from the leadoff position.
Yeah, Frazier's at least put together a couple nice games in this St. Louis series.
Right.
But, yeah, overall as a whole, I don't think he's a leadoff hitter. He doesn't get on base enough.
No, not by any means. But such is life, and that's why we have a podcast and we don't make the lineups. So
we can just be armchair quarterbacks.
I think it's armchair managers is what they call this in baseball. Armchair managers and armchair pitching coaches. Because I know 95% of Pirates Nation had been thinking of, okay, well, if Kingham gets a guy on base, lets a guy get on base, what does Hurdle do with him? If he had, or say that pitch count does get elevated and he does get everybody out through 7 innings. Because he went 6 2/3, perfect. What does Hurdle do in the 8th? I guarantee the people that weren't tuned in to watch the Penguins and Capitals were thinking, what is Hurdle going to do? They've been in this situation before with guys not necessarily in a, I guess, perfect game situation, especially in the first start, because I think this was a pretty historic marking and one of the 22 best for MLB debuts in the last 30, 50 years or so.
I think it was like one of the 22 best game scores.
Right.
Which is 84 an imperfect was the game score. Fun stat, but still not that bad at all.
No. So you kind of play that armchair pitching coach role because you really don't know, A, what's going to happen. You've got an elevated pitch count. He was in the 90s. And if he's still perfect, do you send him out?
I mean, it depends on the pitch count. I mean, Kingham's already had Tommy John surgery.
Right.
He, at this point in his career, even though he's, you know, only had a whopping one major league start, knows what his arm can take at this point. It's the same thing that, who's that pitcher in San Diego who took a no-no into the 8th? And he went way up into the 110s pitches. Tyson Ross.
Right. Tyson Ross.
And Tyson Ross is the type of guy who, at this point of his career, San Diego's manager went out there, talked to him for a bit in the 8th inning, and he went back to the dugout. Because Tyson's the guy at this career, it's like, this could really hurt your arm, dude. Do you really want to go for it? And he said, like, I want the no-hitter. I want to go for it. I feel like that's kind of what you have to do with, you know, Kingham or whatever. I mean, there is a certain point where you do have to cut him off. Like, he's not going to throw 110 pitches after 7 innings or 7 or 8 right. innings and, okay, now go back out there. But if he would have gotten the last guy out in the 7th, he probably would have been about 90 pitches.
Right.
I would have sent him back out there for the 8th. I think that's no question.
It's tough. Because as a pitcher myself, I threw a 30-pitch bullpen, for those of you that are wondering at home. In my preparing for my adult league season, I threw only fastballs and changeups, and I was really pretty close to the plate, which was great. Now, when I wake up Monday morning or this morning, I guess
yes, because it's Monday,
right? So I've been told, and so that I've said, I'm not quite sure how I'm going to feel. I would imagine it's going to feel somewhat like a Mack truck hit me, but we're not here to talk about my prowess as an adult league pitcher. We're here to talk about Kingham, and I would have sent him out. Had he not given that hit up, I would, even if he would have let somebody get on base, I think I'd still send him out. It's tough because you're flirting with history. You're flirting with a perfect game and a guy that's 26 years old. So he's been around the block in the minors, especially. This is his first taste of Major League Baseball. And how poetic would it have been had his first start been perfect? But also, would have set up for some crazy amount of not being able to attain that dream because you already set it. You already set that goal, but it also depends on his mental makeup. I've not been able to follow Kingham close because he's been indie predominantly over the last few years. So with that said, I can't speak to who Kingham is, but as a pitcher myself, I've thrown a no-hitter before, so it's cool. And I've had coaches say, hey, do you want to come out? Or I'm taking you out. I said, no, I have no hitter. I'm not coming out. So it all depends on his mental makeup. If you think that he's able to do it, absolutely send him out, whatever. Now, after that 8th inning, then you got to have a conversation with yourself if he has an elevated, an even higher pitch count, obviously, if it's over triple digits, then you've got to really, okay, so do you want this to be here and now, or do you want this to set him up for kind of eight innings? Okay, that's great. Eight perfect innings. Or then you have the fear of the unknown. And that's really, and it's tough because you never know what you're going to get as far as a baseball game goes. You never know if that one pitch that he leaves up or that slider that he hangs over the plate in the bottom of the eighth or top of the eighth or top of the ninth inning ends up being a game that really, or that really sets the game apart from what it is. So it's tough. It's a decision that luckily Clint Hurdle didn't have to make, and it ended up being a perfect situation to bring in Feliz like Clint did.
So last week we brought up the worst minor league franchise we have ever found. The Baby Cakes.
The Baby Cakes, yes. Did you order your Baby Cakes hat?
No, I don't want a Baby Cakes hat anymore. Never. I never want one. Never. Ever.
When's your birthday, Alex?
I'm not telling you now.
I'll find out. We're on Facebook.
Oh, boy. I'm going to delete my Facebook, BRB. So, but we threatened that we were going to come up with a couple other minor league franchises that have crazy names. I found that pretty much the best ones are independent ball, though.
I cover the Eastern League. I cover the Curve. So I'm going to stay in the Eastern League because I think a couple of those teams are well worthy of it.
All right. Here. You go, then. Age before beauty.
Well, this is prior to over the last few years, I guess, you've got it used to be the Binghamton Mets. It used to be the New Britain Rock Cats, which is kind of an intimidating name, if you ask me. But now, the Binghamton Rumble Ponies exist. It's a carousel horse, for those of you that don't know at home. And then Binghamton, actually, I believe they went to Hartford. I could be wrong. I apologize if I'm wrong. But a lot of these teams used to be named after their parent club. You had the Reading Phillies, the Fighting Phillies, whatever. The Senators are kind of like the Nationals, which actually ends up working out really well. But you've got teams like this. Now you've got the Akron Arrows were rebranded as the Akron Rubber Ducks. And their logo is actually kind of neat. The Curve have been the Curve for 20 years. And if you haven't been able to get a chance to, shameless plug for my interview with Corey Geiger, beat reporter who covers the Altoona Curve for the Altoona Mirror in Altoona. But the Binghamton Mets, they had the biggest change last season. They're now the Binghamton Rumble Ponies. That's right. Tim Tebow, all 224 of his average, he is a Rumble Pony. Never thought I'd ever say that, but the way that it is. Bowie's been the Bay Sox forever. Erie's been the Seawolves forever. Harrisburg's been the Senators. Then you've got the Hartford Yard Goats, who last year played every single game on the road. They built a brand new stadium, and it wasn't ready. They played every game on the road, which was a very interesting season, to say the least. Which, the Yard Goat, I don't know necessarily what that is, but who knows. You've got the Portland Sea Dogs and the New Hampshire Fisher Cats. You've got the Reading Fighting Phils, or the Fightins now, I believe. The Richmond Flying Squirrels. And you've got the Trenton Thunder. But let's focus on the Rumble Ponies and the Yard Goats. I like farm animals. Eventually, I'll have a dog. I don't know that I'll ever invest in a goat or a llama or even a pony. But as somebody that's run a carousel ride at Lakemont Park, R.I.P. It's just one of those things that I never once envisioned that a team would ever call themselves a Rumble Pony or a carousel horse for those counting at home. So, Yard Goats, I can see in Hartford, Connecticut, there's probably not much going on up there. Sorry to any of our valued listeners listening in from Hartford, Connecticut. Connecticut, home of ESPN, the mothership of sports. it's just one of those things that that's what makes minor league baseball so great. You think about it. Harrisburg is the capital of Pennsylvania. Senators. That's what Senators are in Harrisburg. So that's kind of cool. So that's the beauty of minor league sports and independent league sports. You find these names that are really, really restricted to your area, like the Curb. In Altoona, we have the Horseshoe Curb, which was a big target of Adolf Hitler's during World War II. So, and it was one of those things that was on his to-be-bombed list that never ended up getting bombed. But you've got a town like Altoona, who's known for railroad and that sort of thing, so it embodies that area. It's a blue-collar town. So I don't know that there are many rubber ducks in Akron. Go Cavs for beating the Pacers. But that's what makes minor league baseball so cool. And at the same time, you've got this rebranding. Now you've got all these teams. So say you were the Binghamton Mets and you changed your name to the Rumble Ponies. Now you've got all these brands and different hats and clothes and merchandise and different promotions that you can do because you've rebranded. So now you're making even more money than what you were before, prior to the brand switch.
You know, I often say that we don't have enough baseball podcasts that bring up Hitler.
Hey, listen, I'm just here to give Altoona history. Eventually, I'll be a historian.
You didn't even give the best part of Altoona history, and what the Curve were almost named.
The fish.
Yes,
the
because.
Lake monsters. Well, listen, it's because the Curve won.
It would be a tuna fish.
Altoona. Actually, we still have a fish. It's Al, and he's our rally fish. So, technically, that did come full circle. Speaking of mascots and branding, the Curve have gone through the gauntlet as far as that goes over the first few years. The first mascot that we have is Steamer. He's the front of a K4 steam engine, or a bigger Gumby, for those of you that have seen him in person. Then we had Diesel Dog, his trusty sidekick, because the general manager's daughter at the time wanted a dog as a mascot. I don't know if Diesel Dog was put to sleep or he ran away, but Diesel Dog can no longer... And actually, I think that would be a really cool thing. My major was sport management, so I see things a little bit differently, kind of like a Darren Rovell. But also, like, kind of like a Jared Prugar, that I just say what's on my mind. And it usually works for me. So here we go. If the Curve really wanted to do something cool, and Derek Martin, if you're listening, thank you. Appreciate that, general manager of the Curve. If Diesel Dog were to have run away or were to have been put to sleep, it would be a great opportunity for the Curve to really come out with, like, maybe a series of books to help kids deal with the loss of a pet or a loved one. You find a local author. I'm a writer. I'll gladly do it. To come up with a children's book to really go over that, which I think would be something cool. But also, after Diesel Dog, RIP, potentially, they came.
Yeah, he might be alive still.
He might be. He might be out in the backyard, back behind the fence, roaming around. Who knows?
I thought you were going in a different direction with that one.
I wasn't going to go Old Yeller, but I like where your head's at, Mr. Hitler. but here's the thing. Then they came up with a rally fish. And, Alex, when I treat you to Curve Burgers because I lost a bet, you'll get to potentially see Al. Al is a Al is a tuna fish. Do you get it, Alex?
I get it. I'm just not laughing.
Okay. He's a rally fish. He comes out of the wall in center field and really just runs around. It's a happy fish. He doesn't flop around at all like a dead fish. So he's a happy fish. But the graphics packages that come with Al, and I've got a really good story about Al from the championship run last year that I won't be able to tell people on the record or on this podcast. But ever, if you're in Altoona and want to know the real story about Altoona, the fish, let me know, and I'll let you know what I know from the locker room of the Curve Championship celebration last year.
It'll be in Locked On After Dark.
Yeah, yes, Locked On After Dark. the story of Al. But that's the cool thing to me about minor league sports. Like, nowhere else are you going to get Rumble Ponies versus Flying Squirrels or the Rumble Ponies taking on the Yard Goats. But let's get to the independent leagues, Alex.
Well, just a few other ones that you missed. Do you watch MASH at all?
I've watched MASH, yes.
You've watched MASH?
But I couldn't sleep, and it's the only thing on it after midnight.
Oh, I legitimately like the show, so I'm not going to take that. Well, Klinger. That's Toledo Mud Hens. I love that name.
Yeah.
The Jamestown Jammers, which their logo appears to be a bunch of Concord grapes. Which, okay, sure, why not? The El Paso Chihuahuas, if you're going to name your team after a dog, Coyote.
So, fun fact about the Chihuahuas, the Curve now, Garrett Mansfield, who does media relations with the team, and also in conjunction with Trey Wilson, he's one of the announcers. Garrett worked for the Chihuahuas previously, before his career brought him to Tatooine. But go on.
The Montgomery Biscuits, the name is dumb, but the logo is of an actual biscuit where a pat of butter is
That's
the tongue.
So awesome.
It's weird. I don't get it. And I'm going to bring up this Savannah Sand Gnats. Not because I don't know what a sand gnat is. I don't get paid enough to figure that out. But I'm just going to bring up two independent league teams. And I brought up the Sand Gnats because the other team from Savannah plays in the same stadium. And I've been to that stadium, Grayson Stadium. It's garbage. It's probably been the worst stadium I've ever been in. But Savannah in the Coastal Plain League.
That's such a good league, I've heard. Just kidding, I have no idea.
Yeah, nobody knows this league. Their team name.
Wait. Can I please guess this?
Go for it.
Please tell me it's bananas.
It's bananas.
B-A-N-A-N-A-S. The Savannah Bananas. That's so great.
Savannah Bananas and Pajamas.
Oh my god, that's such a good promotion. Please tell me they do that.
I don't know if they do that. They should. I'm gonna send them a DM. I'm gonna fix this.
That's so awesome.
Okay, it rhymes, whatever.
Well,
but my
personal
favorite for how dry the humor is in the Frontier League, which is the same league that the Washington Wild Things play in, actually.
Correct.
We have the Normal Corn Belters.
Yes. This logo is, I'm actually looking this up now. This logo is phenomenal. If you have a chance, please look up the Normal Corn Belters.
And he is either incredibly tired or...
he's been shucked way too many times, is what this looks like.
He looks like he would not pass a drug test. How about that?
But the thing with this is, so you know how you get those little weird little stringy things when you shuck corn? That's what serves as his hair.
Yeah.
And then his the coating, I guess, the leafy thing. I'm not a corn expert. I'm not a farmer by any means. I just cover farm team baseball. But they provide. It looks like his arms. This is awesome. That's so great. And they're in Central Illinois. You've got the Topeka Train Robbers. That's kind of fun.
Topeka Train Robbers. Sorry, I'm laughing at you openly admitting to the world that you're not a corn expert.
Alex, I know you're a fan of the
Simpsons, yeah.
Right?
How did you forget
the Albuquerque Isotopes?
Which, I mean, we know where Springfield is now.
Albuquerque.
Yeah, how about that? Never would have expected it.
No, absolutely not. But that's the – when I coached in – well, then you have the Macon Bacon college summer league team, which is fun. Now, the college summer league team that I've coached, not nearly as fun as the name – however, it's the stadium that had the mystique. It was the DuBois County Bombers. It's in Huntingburg, Indiana. But what's cool about that stadium is it's League Stadium. And if you know the name League Stadium, it's one of the two stadiums that they used to film A League of Their Own with Gina Davis and Rosie O'Donnell and Tom Hanks. So what's cool about that is they were at that time, they were called the Rockford Peaches, is the team that played at League Stadium. Well, I want to say it's after the sixth inning. I could be wrong. I was too busy coaching, so I really didn't understand it. But the Bomber cheerleaders, the Peaches, if you will, they did the Cotton Eye Joe. They dressed up in similar style uniforms as the Rockford Peaches from the movie, and did the Cotton Eye Joe, which I thought was one of the coolest things that you could really incorporate. And it was a really fun part of Indiana and my time there, being able to spend the summer there. But if I would have heard "There's No Crying in Baseball" one more time that summer, I probably would have lost my marbles. Did you see it? It's plastered on the sign or on the signs in the stadium, and it's really cool. And they had they had seats from the old, oh man, you might have to help me out on this. The stadium before Turner Field in Atlanta. I think it's Municipal County Stadium, right?
That was in Fulton?
Fulton County Stadium, that's it. They had seats from there. So, and then the other seats were kind of preserved throughout time as the old school baseball that used to be, that was used when they filmed A League of Their Own. And it was such a really cool atmosphere. The wall and everything, the old time scoreboard, everything was from the movie. It was really cool. I lost a game of musical chairs to the fan section. Shout out Third Base Deadbeats. But it was a really cool thing. And that's what's cool about independent league and minor league sports. They get you, you're not there for very long. I was there for a summer, but I have some very good friends that I could call up in Indiana any day and, hey, I'm coming out to visit. Do you want to grab a drink or go catch a game or just hang out, go grab something to eat? In minor league baseball, and Corey and I talked about this, and even I got to speak with Cole Tucker and Will Craig over the last weekend with a story that I ran for Locked On Pirates about taking advantage of the time you're in a minor league city. You're not there for very long. Will Craig is not going to be in Altoona for very long, I don't think. Cole Tucker is definitely not going to be in Altoona very long. However, those are guys that want to give back to the community that they're in while they're there and embrace that mentality and embrace that ability to do just that while they're there, even though they're not going to be there very long.
Should we move on then to our final weekly feature of my favorite word, prognostications?
Prognostications, yes. I know how great you are at saying this word.
I have worked on it.
I know you're better at writing.
I'm an old pro at it now.
And I'm glad, Alex. That Point Park education serving you very well.
Oh, man, I don't like giving them the free press.
It's all right. I went to Robert Morris, and I majored in business, and our business is good. Go to rmu.edu/apply. Sorry, that was shameless plug.
And if you're interested in going to Point Park University, I would strongly encourage you to look at another school.
And not in journalism. But that's another story for another day. That might help. Heck, that might be our topics next week. Don't major in journalism.
You have no room to talk. I'm the one who would be doing that the entire time.
Well, I can help you out because I didn't major in that.
I'd be giving this rousing Churchill-esque speech about major in anything else.
Major in something that you're going to be able to make a career out of
and
do something on the side that you really enjoy, like journalism, which is the case for me. And here we are on Clear the Deck on the Locked On Pirates Network. Alex, what are your prognostications for this week? Also, do you remember our numbers for last week? Because I do believe I had them losing less than two games.
I think you said sweep of the Tigers and then two out of three against the Cardinals.
Yes, I just got it wrong. Yeah, I did have a sweep in there.
I mean, 5-1. I mean, we're going by record, not by actual series here.
Right.
I can't remember if I was 4-2 or 3-3. I know they had this.
I had it. I definitely had it better than you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So this one, so, yes. I went. We should probably keep track of this.
Yeah, it's not too late. So, we can figure it still.
So now week 17 into this podcast, let's decide now that we're going to keep track of our prognostications.
Yes.
Do you want to keep track, Alex, or would you like me to?
I'll keep track. It's about time I start pulling my weight around here.
That's right. You hardly ever record. This is kind of a one-sided thing.
Shh. They don't need to know that.
I heard you're changing your name of your other podcast.
Oh, yeah, because Nathan Hirsch tweeted out that I don't want to give away the full punchline of it, but basically I turned it into a My Name Jeff joke because it's still 2016. So this is no longer this is no longer Clear the Deck. This is My Name of Jeff.
Whoa, 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 whoa. You have your own podcast.
And the Locked On interview is My Name of Jeff, too.
Whoa, 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 whoa. You are not changing the name of our podcast. It's our podcast, Clear the Deck. We had to fight for that name. We had a 5-person vote on Twitter that got us that name. We're not changing it.
All right. We'll compromise. We're going to make it Clear the Jeff.
Clear the Jeff.
Clear the Jeff.
Clear the Jack. Clear the Jeff. Clear the Jeff Decker. oh, my God.
Why didn't we're straight.
Wait. Why didn't we think of this before? Clear because the Jeff Decker. Really, we've created the greatest name ever. It honors the former pirate great, and it gets everything in there. I think the Alex Stumpf Experience or the Alex Stumpf Interview Series, which you have not had me on yet. Thank you.
I talk to you every week. You'll be on. Don't you worry.
Anyway, I'm just a little disappointed it's not more of Alex.
I'll get him on one of these days. Prognostications.
All right. Who do we have this week? I guess I should look ahead.
Yeah, we got 4 games in Washington has been sub 500, but still a very dangerous lineup up and down. They're going to be facing Scherzer in Strasburg. I'm going to say 2-2 in that series. I don't know which two they're going to win, but game 2, Chad Cole against Max Scherzer in that House of Horrors, I don't
Scherzer
feel good.
Scherzer all day, every day.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's a no-brainer. They're not going to pull a full 4-game sweep off in Washington. So 3 would be the best case scenario. I'm going to take one step below. I think Strasburg and Scherzer get them. But they beat Roark and Hellickson, so not too bad. And for Milwaukee, yeah, that's another house of horrors.
I'm not sold on the NL Central because of the Reds. Because each of those teams have to play the Reds.
Yeah, so everyone's record's a little diluted. Should actually be. I'll be a pessimist here, and I say Brew Crew take 2 out of 3, so I'm saying 3 and 4 this week.
I'm saying, let's see, there's 7 games. I'm saying 4 and 3.
4 and 3.
Do you write that down somewhere?
Oh, I'll write it down whenever I keep track of the other ones.
Mental note, please, Alex. Mental note. Maybe we can do something more than a Curve Burger and Chicken and Pete's.
Probably should.
Have you scheduled your trip to Altoona yet?
I'm actually going to talk to you about that whenever we hang up around here. Might be sooner than you think.
Oh man. I can't wait. anything else you want to get off your chest, Alex, while we're here? We had some really good Pirates baseball this week.
We did. It was fun this week.
Now, you did a story for the Pittsburgh Sports Report on Cervelli's swing. And I kind of want to ask you, how long did it take you to realize that? Because that's such a subtle adjustment as far as the stance goes. And what led you to that discovery?
Well, I cheated. And he's like, I changed my stance. And, you know, it's an oppressor. And the question comes, how did you change it? I'm usually a lot better at this. I'm kind of surprised I didn't pick it up with Cervelli. I'm actually fairly disappointed in myself. But, hey, I was the only person who took the screenshots, it feels like, or actually explained how his stance has changed. He's straightened out his back. He's no longer crouched over. He's added a leg kick, or he occasionally had a leg
kick.
Which
is for timing.
Yeah, for timing. He hit 4 home runs this month, man. I mean, if he stays healthy, I wouldn't be surprised if he hits 20.
What's been great about the Pirates' depth this year, they have a very small bench, 4-man bench, is that correct?
Yes.
So you have catcher 1A and 1B in Elias Diaz and Francisco Cervelli as a starter. So you're not missing very much whenever Diaz is in. And I think that's...
He's hitting a very casual 484.
Right. So, and he broke the game open today and got Kingham that start, or not the start, but the W. He's been very good in those doses that he's been in. And having that option, and don't get me wrong, I love Chris Stewart, the personal catcher for Garrett Cole, whenever Garrett Cole pitched, which was mind-boggling to me. But anyway, every pitcher has their quirks, and I get that. I've had multiple catchers multiple years, so whatever. I also don't play professional baseball, so my opinion also doesn't matter. But it's great to have that. You've got bench versatility, and really we're seeing that depth pay off because David Freese has stepped in whenever he's platooning with Moran and had success. Josh Bell has played okay. Frazier's starting to come around. You've got Moran, who's played very well. Dickerson has played pretty well. You've got these guys, and Osuna, well, he was up. In the game that he was up, played very well. So you're getting these guys that are coming off the bench. Sean Rodriguez. So what? Okay, so we have Diaz, Rodriguez. That's kind of funny. Freeze. And who's the...
Frazier.
Well, Frazier starts now.
Morov.
Morov. How could you ever forget that? You're so disappointed.
Well, I just kind of pencil Morov in.
You're super
as the
disappointed
de facto starter.
Alex. This is unreal. But anyway, so that's your 4-man bench. And a lot of those guys are able to play different positions, so that helps. So it's great. And having that depth, and then you have a guy like Brault who's able to come off the bench and pinch hit. So that's also kind of cool too. And then I believe Chad Kuhl ran as a pinch runner the other day.
Yeah.
So
and he didn't completely fall apart.
So while the Pirates are operating with a very short bench, they've also got enough athletes on the squad that can go out and perform admirably in positions that really they're not guaranteed success in or they're comfortable with because that's not what they're being paid to do. So having that depth, even with a short bench, speaks volumes to why they are where they are right now. But that's enough out of me. Alex, do you have any final thoughts?
My name's Jeff.
Decker. This has been... Actually, no. Let's close this on a positive note. The Pirates have swept the Cardinals, something that if you would have asked me at the beginning of the year, even though I said they were going to win 86 wins, or have 86 wins, which I believe they are 69 wins away.
Nice.
Very nice. That's what we're going to end on. The Pirates are 69 wins away from 86 wins this season, which was my... Alex, say the word for me.
Nice.
No. Prognostication.
Oh, prognostication. I'm still stuck on nice.
I understand. Such a child. Point Park degrees. Anyway, the deck has been cleared. For Alex Stump, this has been Jared Prugar on Clear the Deck on Locked On Pirates Podcast Network, your daily Pittsburgh Pirates podcast of choice. Happy Monday, fans, and let's go Bucks.